Would you like to accelerate your career and reach your full potential in just minutes a day? Welcome to the LeadX Show with New York Times bestselling author and Inc. 500 entrepreneur, Kevin Cruz.
How can you lead your startup literally from your parents' basement into a 300-employee powerhouse? Kevin Cruz here. Welcome to the LeadX Show, my friends. We are helping you to get 1% better every single day. And don't forget, you can watch a new free training video every day at leadx.org. Recent topics have been on ways to double your productivity, how to motivate your team members, and even secrets to authentic leadership. Today on the show, I talked to a great entrepreneur, very humble, who built his company patiently into a global success with customers now in over 100 countries. We talk about culture as strategy, defining your value by deciding who you are not for, and what it was like when after 2 years of being in business, they were still only making $1,000 a month. Our challenge of the day, based on his advice to new managers, pick one thing you're doing yourself at work that you can assign to someone on your team and assign it. Maybe they're going to make a mistake. Maybe they're going to need some training. But when you do stuff yourself, you're robbing them of opportunities for growth, for learning, for challenge, and for visibility. Pick something that you're doing yourself and give it to another. Our quote of the day is from Steve Jobs. Your time is limited, so don't waste it living someone else's life. And now let me introduce our guest. He's the co-founder and CEO of FreshBooks, the world's number one cloud accounting software for self-employed professionals. Built in 2003, after he accidentally saved over an invoice, he spent 3.5 years growing FreshBooks from his parents' basement. Since then, over 10 million people have used FreshBooks. They've just completed a $57 million venture raise. Our guest is the CEO, Mike McDermott. Mike, welcome to the LeadX Show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
We have a tradition on our program where all of our guests get asked the same first question because I like failures. I think they can be stepping stones to bigger things. I think there's a lot of lessons in them. So I'm hoping you'll start by, telling me a story of one of your best failures and what did you learn from it?
I guess there's a range of failures, different sizes and shapes. And there's the business failures and the personal failures. So there's, I got failures of all kind of sizes, shapes, varieties, personal, business. I will say this, and it may sound trite, but, I don't really understand that word. It's all learning, right? So people would say failure and I would just say learning. Like there's really no difference between the two other than your mindset and your orientation. And so commonly when I talk about this thing, I will say one of the biggest mistakes we made was in naming our company. And so we're called FreshBooks today, but when we got started, we actually had a very different brand name. It was Second Sight, which if you were to try and find in the history of brand names, like the worst possible combination of things, you might come up with that name legitimately. I mean, it's two words. They both have multiple ways to spell them or represent them. It's pretty forgettable, pretty meaningless. We didn't get the right domain names. I could go on, but one of the big mistakes we made was actually naming the company, poorly. And we had an advisor who one day just kind of asked us the question, like, "What do you think about your company name? You think that's good?" And the initial reaction on that phone call, I remember, was like, "Oh, it's great." And then we actually called him up the next day and was like, "Oh my God, you're right. This is terrible. We are so far off the plan." And so the question is, like, why is it one of your greatest failures? I think it's because, and I think this was the beginning of a trend in sort of building this business, but because of how we channeled that, I then went on to really get an education in like how you name companies and what makes a good brand name and get kind of sort of scientific about it. Like if we'd had a mediocre name, it would have been less likely that I would have sort of gone on the journey. So there's an upside to doing things terribly if it's important to you, you're going to reevaluate everything and not hang on to anything. And you're going to recognize there's actually a problem. Sometimes being in the middle is it's the longest, it takes the longest to figure out something's wrong. So anyway, so went on this journey and really started to deconstruct, well, what makes a good brand name? And it kind of, there are two paths. You can take something that has no meaning and, you know, is a word that's kind of empty and build meaning in, and things like Twitter are like that. Or you can sort of cobble together a couple words that, you know, sort of demonstrate, you know, your category, your benefit and your difference and a variety of other things. And so, you know, for me, it was a big mistake, and we had to change things up. The good news is we channeled it into something very fruitful, and you know, our name's actually been something that's helped us in many ways along the way since. So that's a good story from my point of view.
Yeah, and I'm curious. I mean, FreshBooks is a great name. Did you guys work with a naming agency, or did you guys come up with it yourself?
No. So the backstory is, for those who aren't aware, we actually spent about 3.5 years in my parents' business after sort of launching the site, trying to turn it into a business. And it was in those years, and those are very scrappy years. And so what we got asked that question, like, hey, what do you think of it? And, you know, eventually became very clear it was a poor name. And that's when I went on the journey of trying to figure it out. And so I, you know, called another advisor who had a background in marketing. And, you know, there were a couple blog posts at the time out there that, you know, were helpful and sort of distilled things down to, like, hey, this is literally category, benefit, difference are some of the things that matter. Ease of use of remembering. I developed some personal opinions. Like, I actually believe harsh consonants are actually really powerful things to have in a name, because right, they kind of pound their way into your head and they're memorable. And so, you know, sort of went on this journey, and we literally spent an hour a day for like 2.5-3 weeks brainstorming words that captured our category, that captured our benefit, that captured our difference. And from it was like 1 till 2 p.m. every day for like 2 weeks. We were like dictionary, thesaurus, like word cross puzzle in a room trying to come up with that stuff, and had lists and lists and lists. And the most hilarious thing about it is, So we got the word books out of that. We had a lot of stuff around billing, because that's the core focus of what we were doing. So, but interesting, the word fresh never came up in all that brainstorming. And this is the way, like, sort of breakthroughs work. Like, a piece of like direct mail came through the mailbox in my parents' home one day, and the word fresh was just sitting there, and we'd just been doing this. And once you start working on a same problem for an hour a day for a couple of weeks, like, everything you see starts to go through that lens. And it was like, oh my God, fresh and books. Like, that's actually really great. It's not a harsh consonant, but otherwise it's totally memorable. It's easy. It's friendly. Like, there's just so many good aspects to it. So probably longer than you expected on that one, but that's the real story.
No. Well, it's a great piece of your origin story, because you were literally, you know, started the company in your parents' basement, and it's almost like how do you name your rock band or something? People coming up with all these crazy words, mashing them together, but that's often what entrepreneurs, startups need to do now to get a domain and hopefully something that reflects your business. So I think that's going to be very helpful to people. And in the spirit of, you know, giving advice, you've now again gone from your parents' basement, built this big business, and I'm curious about your management advice specifically for new managers, you know, someone that's going from individual contributor and you've just promoted them, now they're a first time manager. What would you tell them?
Well, first of all, I'd say you're about to start on a wonderful and fulfilling journey that never ends. People management, which, you know, sort of pretty rapidly, if you're doing it right, evolves into people leadership, is it's a very rich sort of things to learn about. And so, but I think if I had one thing to think about, I would have people, as a contributor, it's like what you do and get done, like how much productivity and capacity and efficacy and efficiency, like you as an individual. So like, how much can I crank out in a day? That is the model. And that's what makes you successful as a contributor. And there are a bunch of ways you can kind of improve on that vector. As a manager, it's a completely different objective. It's, how do I help this individual realize their potential? And do that in a way it aligns with our business outcomes. And it is a very different sleight of hand that you really need to be thinking about and exercising different mental muscles. And it kind of gets to like coaching pretty quickly. But I will say, like, lots of great contributors, the transition to becoming a coach versus, well, you should just do this, you know, because maybe you know a lot about the domain or what have you, you know, is very much a challenging transition that can take time. And, you know, frankly, it's not easy managing people because the first person you manage, like, you don't have a lot of data yet. Right. And you haven't had a chance to run experiments and stub your toe and fail, like try to deliver an important message and have it go horribly wrong and be demotivating to that person. And you will make all those mistakes at some point in your career if you manage people. And so anyways, don't expect to be perfect, I guess. Maybe another one.
at any time when it comes to leadership, like I said, it's a journey that never ends. And you talked about starting in your parents' basement, and you were there for, I think you said, 3 years. Is that what I heard?
That's right. We moved in about a year after sort of starting the business, and we're there for about 3.5 years, actually.
So I think, especially this day and age, I think there's a lot of wannabe entrepreneurs who think it's all about, you know, inventing the next Instagram or WhatsApp, and you sell for $1 billion a year from now. And that's not how most companies work. So tell me about those early days. I mean, you know, I think everybody views FreshBooks as like an overnight success, like really a great startup success. And yet it took you a while to get some traction.
Yeah, like overnight success, 10 years in the making, right? So that's how I think about it. And I'm not going to lie to you, if you scratch behind most of the successes that happened, you know, very quickly, they usually had a chapter of their lives where they learned a lot before that. Like, it's usually you're seeing the byproduct of some other experience that leads to this other outcome, and people will generally skate over that and forget about it, which is, I think, dangerous, because you can take the wrong lessons from someone else's success pretty easily. I'm going to ask you to just sort of remind me what the question was there. So,
yeah, well, your early days, because again, I think you had some patience and tenacity in your early days. You did not immediately take off. And also, you know, for our listeners, we were talking before we started recording that, you know, I sort of admire what you've done, because there were already some big name or commonly known names, entrenched competitors out there. So you you had the moxie to say, hey, we can go into this space. But it wasn't like you had 1,000 customers after your first month or anything.
No, we had 10 customers after 2 years, paying us $9.95 a month each. We were making $100 $100 a month.
Are you exaggerating that, no, or are you being literal?
I'm dead serious. And now, we weren't working on it like full time. It was kind of a side thing, but right. I mean, 2 years in, we were making $100 a month. I think probably best describes those times as, you know, sort of perseverance, right? And I think what we did a really good job of in those early days was we derived satisfaction from things that were non-monetary and numerical. So, you know, talking with our customers, we're FreshBooks is, you know, one of the world's greatest service organizations. You know, think of us like Rackspace or Zappos, and we compete with them and win awards ahead of them when we do. You know, like that, we've always derived enormous satisfaction from speaking with our customers. And that was literally like fuel, because people are telling us they liked it. We hadn't figured out everything yet, like how to market it, you know, at a higher scale, how to price it correctly. You know, there's lots of stuff we hadn't figured out, but people liked the product. And so that counted for a lot and did keep us going. And, you know, we enjoyed each other's company and we were scrappy and kind of figuring things out. And I think that all those things, like, that's the DNA. It's a great starting place. Add time and perseverance and you can really sort of get somewhere. So, you know, that's kind of a window into those early years.
And now, you know, we come to today. You've got customers in over 100 countries. You, I think, recently raised over $50 million venture round, right? I mean, it's incredible. I mean, do you ever, like, when you started, did you see yourself growing it to be as large as it is now?
It's very funny. So the short answer is no. And I think when you think back to those entrenched competitors and what have you, there's a my favorite definition of entrepreneur is you know, folks who are too naive to see the obstacles. I think that's the best definition. And so they just carry on, or sometimes they're presented with them and they just ignore them. And so, you know, that's where we started out by. And so we didn't have this vision of being like, we're going to be a $10 billion company or what have you. And what I would say is over the years, our ambitions and our conviction that we get there have just increased. And it's taken, you know, frankly, in the early years, it took me working with one individual, this advisor who asked me the question about the brand name, actually. He was, you know, he used to consistently ask me this question, like, hey, Mike, how big do you think this thing can be? And turns out he was a co-founder of a $6 billion company. And, you know, my answer to him was the same for years and years. It was like, I don't know.
Oh, wow.
I really don't know. And he was like, just keep going. Right. I believe it could be big. I believe you're nowhere yet. Just keep going. And it actually, like, having someone like that around me was, I think, like, just frankly instrumental in our success, because it gave me the, you know, the, like, it sort of, it was some conviction. Like, I can't see it. I don't know. Instinctually, I like what we're doing. The trend is way up, right? The numbers might be small, but, you know, this person who's been very successful thinks it can be huge. Like, I'm just going to keep going. And, you know, now we have a very different orientation towards how big it can be. And that's great, and more conviction around it and how that all works. But I think there's a lesson in there of, like, surrounding yourself with people who've kind of operated at a completely different scale. If you're just starting out, it can be very, very helpful.
Yeah. And I think what's critical there, it's first of all, having outside advisors, friends, partners, whatever, you know, not to do it alone, but it's not just because of what they know, but sometimes they can believe in you even more than you believe in yourself, or they can see some strengths that you don't see in your own organization. Just that perspective.
Absolutely. Another place, like, we were sort of values oriented as a business, and this was an individual who'd been very values oriented in the building of their business. And so conviction around that, like, I had that, but, like, that was part of what drew me to this individual when they kind of appeared on the scene for me in a roundabout kind of way. So, you know, all of which is to say, I agree, and it's true. And I think it's not easy to find those people, and it was accident and happenstance in my case, but I certainly, you know, hung on by the coattails once that door opened.
I've read in your articles and seen you present in some videos, you say culture is strategy. So what's the culture like at FreshBooks, and how did you build it, or how are you maintaining it?
Yeah, so putting your name on, you know, what is culture is never easy, okay? So I'm going to give you my answer, and then I'll explain why I like it. And I didn't coin this phrase, but we had somebody in our early formative years who worked with us for about 5-6 years, and then it was time for him to go do his next thing. But, you know, we really wouldn't be here without him. He was great. And he said, you know, the culture is like summer camp for adults. And, you know, and so let me tell you why I think that's a good handle. It is first of all, maybe it's not surprising, because the only place I've ever worked before really was a summer camp. And, you know, my last 2 years there, I ended up taking people on 36-day and 42-day canoe trips respectively, right? So what I was doing was taking people on these long trips and leading them through that. You know, so that informed a lot of how we sort of built this business. And you know, what I saw and experienced myself personally, but also within the campers I took out on these trips, was, you know, by the end of the summer, you know, I believe what I saw consistently is people were at their own, like, they're physically fit. You know, they're mentally fit. Their self-esteem is, like, super high. Like, kids coming back to school after the summer, like, they're at their peak if they've, you know, if they, like, in by and large. Now, people have terrible summers and all those kinds of things, but often it's like you're at this kind of, like, peak, you know, emotional awareness, confidence, all this kind of thing. And so it's in that, and that's where you're probably, because you spent the whole summer challenging yourself in new and different ways and getting good feedback and, you know, being outdoors and, you know, all these things create, they just mean people are kind of in their best versions of themselves. And so when I hear, like, that, and that's what I want for everyone who comes. And actually, you know, great places to work is the thing that Fortune 500 companies do to be, you know, best number one, and everyone fights over that stuff. We were the top company under 1,000 employees in 2015, number four in 2016. And so I think some of that stuff bears out in you know, we participate in that thing and compete against folks in our category and are proud of the results. And I think culture, strategies, other things are you know, responsible for some of that.
And about how many employees do you have now?
About 300 now.
With the culture, are you screening for cultural fit when you're hiring new employees, or is there like an indoctrination as part of the onboarding, or both?
Well, the way we think about it is, first of all, we're not looking for homogeny, right? You want people who are different and think different. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But what you do want, and so the way I think of it is like every person should be additive in some way. They should bring something different. And I love quirky people, right? Like, you know, give me more quirky, give me more zany, give me more, you know, just kind of out there. So long as, you know, we have this shared value set underneath however we present above. So we could have different political views. We can have all these differences, but underneath it, like there's a shared value set that, you know, that, and people like you can't train that in, right? And that's the thing where if you accidentally hire somebody who doesn't share that value set, you got to help them leave because, hey, like, listen, you're wonderful, but you know, when push comes to shove, you're probably going to behave in a way that, you know, doesn't work here. And, you know, that's okay. Right? Because there's lots of places where you're going to be wonderful, but this isn't one of them.
Yeah, perfect. So wrapping it up, share for us, I know you're a larger company now and your product has grown, but who is your ideal customer? Like who is FreshBooks perfect for?
Strategically, the company is founded around, I'm going to give you a bit of a longer answer to this, but so we're built on an insight, which is the world is not built for self-employed professionals and their teams. Okay. And what I mean by that is there's whole categories of products like consumers and like enterprise large companies have been served really well, but self-employed folks have not. And, you know, the fact that our product exists is demonstrative of that. There was only one choice. You know, we wanted something that was easier to use, that was better suited to our needs. And so we built something for that. And actually that was kind of the invoicing and accounting software that's made us popular and time tracking expense management. We have a simple app that does those things for service-based business owners. We then went into payments because collecting credit cards if you were a service-based business owner was incredibly, incredibly hard. So those are two categories we've gone into. But there's other ones that are still very broken. And I'm not saying we're going to tackle these, but go and try and get a mortgage if you're self-employed and you don't have an employer backstopping you. So the world is broken for those folks. We're on a mission to reshape the world to suit the needs of self-employed professionals and their teams. Our thesis and our strategic choice on that mission, you know, in the sands of time, this may prove to be an awful choice, but so far so good, and we believe it's still a good one, is that we believe that if you serve everyone, you serve no one. And so what we said is, hey, we're not going to try and serve every kind of small business owner because, frankly, we believe that they're different and they have different needs. And so we don't do retail. We don't do restaurants. We don't do manufacturing. What we do and exclusively do is service-based business owners. So if you get paid for your time and expertise, we are built for you. By virtue of saying no to those other companies, we can make our product simpler and better suited to you. And we believe that in time, that makes all the difference. So I like to say if you invoice, you need FreshBooks. That's our difference maker. That's kind of like the finest point of it all. And you know that strategic choice is the difference between something that feels right for you and doesn't, and something that saves you, you know, time or doesn't. And if you happen to be someone who works for yourself or has a small agency or even a good-sized agency and track time and get paid for time and expertise, then FreshBooks is the product for you.
Perfect. And where can our listeners find out more about you and FreshBooks?
Check us out at FreshBooks.com. You can even start a free trial there if that's interesting to you.
What a great name and URL. Easy to remember, short, unique, right? Long gone those days when you didn't like that company name.
True.
Mike, thanks for coming on to the LeadX show.
Thanks for having me, Kevin.
Friends, before we go, remember, at LeadX, we're on a mission to give free leadership training and professional development to everyone, anywhere, at any time. Visit leadx.org to check out our free course of the day and our weekly live webinars. And if you're the kind of person who always says thank you, please take 1 minute to go leave a quick rating for the LeadX show on iTunes, because we're at 246 reviews and I need to get to 300. We get about 2 ratings a week right now, which is less than 1 per show. My heart is breaking. But big thanks to the new reviews that did come in last month from people like M. Shahi, Annette's Guy, ZenTim69, Mike071966, Stacy H331, Kaplan in Carolina, of course, Princess Rose Love, Megahee01, and Living with Intention. Thanks, guys, for taking that 1 minute, going on to iTunes, clicking some stars, and that subscribe button. Remember, until next time, leadership isn't a choice. Leadership is influence, and we influence all of the time, at work, at home, and in our communities. Today, lead mindfully. Lead with intent.